From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis, host of this edition of PCUSA. Well, before anyone could blink an eye, a grassroots movement took hold to people on a global scale as a response to the death of George Floyd, a Black man who died in police custody in the U.S. city of Minneapolis, to morph from peaceful protests, bouts of burning and looting, and nationwide demands for reform of police behavior into a concerted attack on symbols of the Confederacy. But that shift is now plain to see in places large and small, in numbers well beyond similar actions that followed the 2015 mass murder at a Black church in Charleston, South Carolina, and the 2017 white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. Statues, monuments, and other images honoring Confederate soldiers, slave owners, and other controversial historical figures have been torn down from Virginia to California, either officially or by the protesters themselves, as the country's public reckoning over its treatment of African Americans and other minorities continues. Following the violence and chaos that ensued after a white supremacist protest in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017, there was a similar push to remove symbols of the Confederacy from public places across the nation. Statues of Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and other Confederates were fast-tracked for removal and shipped off to hidden places until local lawmakers could figure out what to do with them. Well, there are many more examples of the removal of Confederate symbols continuing even as we speak. Joining me to discuss these efforts is Jesse Holland, journalist, historian, distinguished scholar in residence at the Library of Congress, and author of Black Men Built the Capitol. Also joining me is Chris Simpkins, VOA senior TV correspondent. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Jesse, when you look at the response to the death of George Floyd, this type of domino effect to the removal of Confederate symbols, which really is not a new concept, what are your thoughts as a person who writes about history?
Well, I also say that I'm also a person who has lived this history as well. I'm actually talking to you from Holly Springs, Mississippi, one of the thousands of southern towns which has that Confederate soldier standing in front of the courthouse. And I'm a graduate of the University of Mississippi, which has been the center of the debate about Confederate imagery since the early 60s. So if places like the University of Mississippi can reconcile itself with getting rid of the Confederate imagery, it doesn't make sense to me why other places cannot as well. This movement to rid the country of the symbols of the traitors of the Confederacy has been moving since the 1980s, but it seems to hit a fever pitch with George Floyd's death. It seems like the millennials and the Gen Zers are the generation that are finally sick of having these symbols in their faces, glorifying the traitors to the Union who fought to keep slavery legal. They seem to be sick of waiting for their elders to solve this problem. So they seem to be taking things into their own hands, which is sort of amazing.
And Chris, you too have covered many African American historical events. What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's kind of interesting to see what's going on. I think the move certainly to get rid of the Confederate war monuments and statues makes all the sense in the world. I grew up in the South around them, didn't pay a lot of attention to them until I started to get older and, you know, never thought about those statues ever possibly coming down. I just chose to ignore them. The Confederate flag was surrounding me. We would see it all over the place. So it was something that I grew up with. So to see so much change happening to remove these racist symbols is just an unbelievable event to me. And to see it happening so quickly is phenomenal.
Now, in another example, in the small Kentucky city of Brandenburg in 2017, they accepted a 70-foot-tall concrete plinth with an oversized statue of a rebel soldier that the University of Louisville had removed after years of criticism from faculty and students. Well, Brandenburg Mayor Ronnie Joyner, who placed the monument in a Riverside Park that hosts a biennial Civil War reenactment, said that he didn't see the monument as a black versus white issue or even as a slavery issue. And that's a quote that he said this. So what was the original purpose in having these Confederate statues?
Well, one of the things that we know with a lot of these Confederate statues is that they were either funded by or pushed by the Daughters of the Confederacy, which was a group, which is a group that wants to keep the glorification of the Confederate soldiers current. They still to this day want to talk about their Southern heritage. And so they began waging a public relations campaign all the way back to the end of the Civil War to rewrite history so their ancestors would not be considered traitors to the Union. They would be considered heroes. They wanted to rewrite the Civil War into this noble endeavor of the South. And for years, they have been successful. One of the ways they did this was to sponsor or pay for these statues all around the country, not just in the South, all around the country. So for years, people have fallen for their public relations campaign and their rewriting of what actually happened in the Civil War. Once again, the push we're seeing right now is not coming from the baby boomers. It's not coming from the silent generation. It's not coming from the Gen Xers. It's not even, frankly, coming from the millennials. It's coming from the Gen Zers who no longer are buying this story of the Gone with the Wind South, this Camelot South with Rhett Butler and Scarlett O'Hara and this noble war that they fought against Northern aggression. They're seeing it as it actually was, a war to keep African Americans in slavery. And this current generation, they're not putting up with it. They're saying that we want these symbols gone, and if you won't do it, we'll take it into our own hands. Now, once again, I am not advocating anyone break the law, but it seems like this current generation is sick and tired of waiting for their elders to do the right thing, and they're taking it into their own hands.
Also, in other countries, such as Venezuela, for example, some residents there are looking at this because they've been through and experienced a lot of unrest in their country. And some of them are giving the protesters a kind of a warning that just be careful in doing this, because once it starts, it doesn't stop, that they will just be attacking everything going on down to religious symbols and even trying to change the identity of the country. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that it can go too far, but we can't just do nothing and just pretend like these symbols don't exist. Just like Chris said earlier, I grew up in the South having to ignore these Confederate imagery. Our current generation doesn't seem to want to ignore it. They seem to want to solve the problems. And there is a concern, because I've already heard people talk about the statues of George Washington, who owned slaves, the statues of Thomas Jefferson, who owned slaves, the statue of Abraham Lincoln that actually sits in the park in the middle of Washington, D.C., with the African-American slave kneeled at his feet as he was in imagery freeing him, about how that statue is possibly inappropriate. I don't think there's anything wrong with talking about the imagery that we have in front of us. I don't see there being a problem with saying, hey, is this appropriate? There does need to be a limit, but there's nothing wrong with having these discussions, because the imagery that we force people to see by having it on public land, the imagery that we don't have a choice to see, I think we should be, as a country, be able to come to a consensus and say, this is appropriate or this is not appropriate. And I think that's a discussion that we're having and is worth having.
Yes, Chris?
I think you're right. And I think a good example is what is going on now with the controversy, just like Jesse mentioned, of the Emancipation Memorial. It's on Capitol Hill. It was erected in 1876. And it's interesting that the funds to build this memorial came from freed black slaves, Jesse. And maybe you can talk about that. And that's part of the argument. But the imagery, like you say, is one of Abraham Lincoln with a freed black slave kneeling at his feet with chains broken.
But the imagery of the statue, if you look at the statue, which, by the way, is in Lincoln Park, maybe about 15 blocks from the U.S. Capitol. If you look at the statue, it's a statue of Abraham Lincoln, and at his feet is a kneeling black man. So, I mean, I think it's worth having a discussion of the imagery of that statue. I mean, just the same way we're having the discussion about the imagery of the Aunt Jemima symbol on the Aunt Jemima syrups. Yes, African Americans did pay for that statue, just like the Aunt Jemima imagery was of a African-American woman. Just because African-Americans participated in it does not mean that it's not worth having a discussion over whether it's appropriate.
And I just add, Jesse, on that, while they did raise the money for it, blacks had no say in its design.
Correct. That is 100% correct. And I think we see that a lot. The opponents of making these changes want to say, apparently over and over, well, if at least one African-American had something to do with it, then it must be okay. I've seen that same argument over the Confederacy. Well, there were some African-Americans who were on the Confederacy side, so it couldn't have been racist. That's not an appropriate argument. It's not even a realistic argument. So we need to look at these images and we need to make a decision of whether they are appropriate for today. We don't glorify everything in the past, so we need to make sure that the things we are glorifying are appropriate for the present.
Now, of course, we all learn from history, and we should learn from the mistakes that people made as well as the good that has been done. So where should the focus be in trying to reconcile history with what is going on today? We really can't erase what has happened. And with the removal of these Confederate symbols, is that truly going to help reconcile slavery?
That is always the question. What actual good does it do? Now, I would say if we remove this Confederate imagery and put it in context in history, once again, ignore the public relations campaign that has been done for decades by Confederacy supporters and put it into actual context, it will help us reconcile our history. One of the things that we've seen over and over and over is that people try to use history as a weapon to justify the things they're doing in the present. But once we can contextualize and understand what really happened, we take away that weapon. We remove that weapon that's being used against the public. Now, I will tell you that I think this Confederate imagery deserves a place in our history, because it is historical, but it doesn't deserve glorification. So if you want to remove the imagery and relegate it to the history books, to the museums, where people who want to see it can go see it of their own volition, remove it from public eyes. Don't force people to look at it. Let people make the choice to go look at it. I think that's a big step in educating the country and moving us forward as a whole.
I would add to that, I would agree that these monuments and statues have a place in the museum. But what also needs to happen is that in these museums, they need to explain that these items were erected to present a false narrative of history. So if we're going to pull these items down, we're going to need to put up monuments that clearly and factually state what happened. The Confederate monuments were simply designed to reinforce a false narrative of white superiority and supremacy. And I would like to personally see more monuments and name changes that would highlight some of the civil rights leaders who we have facts on of how they shaped history and fought and sacrificed lives so that other people could have the freedoms that we're all guaranteed under our Constitution.
Okay, great. And we're going to stop here and take a quick break. You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest via Skype is Jesse Holland, journalist, historian, distinguished scholar in residence at the Library of Congress, and author of Black Men Built the Capitol. Also joining me is my colleague, Chris Simpkins, VOA senior TV correspondent. He is also via Skype. I'm Kim Lewis. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Here's a shout out to our loyal listener in Nigeria, Gloria Olabadin. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. Now back to our discussion on the removal of Confederate symbols as a stepping stone to reconciling the injustices experienced by African Americans. Now, it is not just memorials to the Confederacy that are being removed. California legislative leaders announced that an enormous statue of Christopher Columbus and Spain's Queen Isabella will be removed from the Capitol Rotunda in Sacramento, where it was installed in 1883. Though Christopher Columbus, well, he's been described as a polarizing figure given his impact on indigenous populations here in the U.S. upon his arrival here. What are your thoughts on Christopher Columbus, Jesse?
Well, here's the thing that we have to always keep in mind when we're talking about this. Most of the history that those of us who were our older were taught was written by white historians. Some of that history was skewed toward glorifying the Eurocentric point of view. Christopher Columbus is a good example of that. So many of us were taught growing up that Christopher Columbus discovered America. We now know that is completely wrong on several fronts. First of all, how do you discover a continent that people are already living on? Second of all, Christopher Columbus never actually made it to North America. So why are there statues to Christopher Columbus? Why is there a holiday to Christopher Columbus? So once again, as we've discovered the true history, people are reconsidering whether these people that we grew up watching and talking about and frankly glorifying deserve it. And keep in mind that with Christopher Columbus's arrival in the Caribbean, he brought along diseases that killed off the natives. Why does that deserve glorification? So I don't think it's a problem with rethinking whether Christopher Columbus deserves a national holiday, and frankly, whether Christopher Columbus deserves a place in the history books at all. He definitely doesn't deserve the statue for the thing he didn't do. And I think that's the conversation that's happening around the country about all of these statues. Why are we glorifying people from a myth when we know they didn't do the thing that the statues say they did? So why should we continue doing something that we know is incorrect? That's why you see them coming down.
Chris.
Yeah, I think that's right, too. It's surprising. Again, one of the things that I grew up with, I remember young visiting Philadelphia and seeing the big Christopher Columbus statue there. But as we have moved forward and we have evolved and we're trying to reckon our own racial past, it does make sense to probably look at removal of Christopher Columbus statues. And even, you know, now we're hearing more people, instead of saying Columbus Day, which is a federal government holiday here in the United States, more and more people I've seen have been calling it Indigenous Peoples Day, and that we should honor the Native Americans who were here on this soil before Christopher Columbus ever got to this side of the world. So I think it's important that we may look at that and think about new holidays that should be created, just like the Juneteenth holiday, which was just celebrated here on the 19th, which was the day that the slaves down in Texas finally got the news that they had been emancipated.
Yes, that's correct. I was just about to bring up Juneteenth, and just to give a little more information and background on that, Juneteenth is a combination of the words June and 19th. Juneteenth commemorates June 19th, 1865, when, as you said, Chris, Union General Gordon Granger read federal orders in Galveston, Texas, announcing that enslaved people in the state were free. This action made Texas the last Confederate state to accept the conditions then President Abraham Lincoln spelled out more than 2 years earlier in the Emancipation Proclamation. Recently, 47 U.S. states have deemed it a state or ceremonial holiday. And also the nonprofit, the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation, well, they're continuing to push for Juneteenth to become a national holiday. So given all of this, why hasn't Juneteenth been more recognized in the past? And why now are people paying more attention to it today?
Juneteenth has been celebrated in the past. Juneteenth actually is celebrated around the world because the descendants of those people, those freed slaves of Galveston, Texas, first took the celebration out of Galveston to Texas, out of Texas to around the country, to around the country, to around the world. What hasn't happened is that that celebration has never been accepted by whites. Until this year, behind the deaths of George Floyd, we saw major corporations like Google, like Apple, recognize Juneteenth as a day that should be set aside to celebrate the emancipation of African Americans in the Civil War. So this is actually being led by businesses more than anyone else to make the white Americans accept it.
What do you think about that, Chris? And also, I listened to a news report where they were interviewing some African Americans. Some of them had said they had not even heard of Juneteenth.
There were pockets within our community where some people don't recognize the day. For instance, here in Washington, D.C., a city holiday here is Emancipation Day, the day that in January 1863 that the Emancipation Proclamation was signed by President Lincoln. And so we have celebrated Emancipation Day in April, I believe, here. It's time to look at to making this a national holiday. We fought so hard for a national holiday honoring Dr. Martin Luther King. Certainly, this holds just as much weight, if not more, for having a federal holiday. And I think it's important that we do recognize this. When I was in the South, I wouldn't see pockets of it, but a few years ago, I went up to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and couldn't believe how many African Americans live in that community and how they spent the whole weekend celebrating Juneteenth. Because I thought this was something that African Americans maybe just in the South would celebrate, but really realized, like Jesse was mentioning, how this has been celebrated all over the country in many different communities, even communities that are mostly white, but that it has not received the recognition among white people that this deserves to be a national holiday.
And again, before we move on, let me add this on to this conversation as well. Several southern states, just like D.C., celebrated that emancipation on different days. Here in Mississippi, where I'm from, it was May 8th when the federal troops read the general orders that told African Americans that they were free. So in Mississippi, Emancipation Day is on May 8th. But what we see with Juneteenth is a coalition of all of those days being put together and celebrated at once. Just like we celebrate all the presidents on President's Day, we're now going to start celebrating all of these different Emancipation Days on Juneteenth. So there is that national holiday, but Southern states will likely keep celebrating their individual holidays when those Union troops came and told those once slaves that they were now U.S. citizens and free.
That's good. It'll be interesting to see if it actually does become a national holiday. Well, in light of the unrest and the protests, observers are saying that it appears to be history simply repeating itself with the same issues. What makes this different? Or is it really history simply repeating itself?
Well, we won't know whether this has a lasting impact until later, because as you've said, we've seen this type of thing happen over and over. We can go back to Trayvon Martin. We can go back to Michael Brown. We can go back to Eric Garner. We can go back to Tamir Rice. It does seem like this time something's different. It does seem that not just in the African-American community, the people out on the streets from every community. You're seeing people marching with George Floyd's name on their breath around the world. So there does seem to be this coalescing mass that wants change. And of course, you know, the thing that actually provides change is voting. So we're seeing people already talking about taking their anger out at the polls. And when you start talking about taking your anger out on politicians at the polls is when you see politicians pushing for the change. Perhaps with this being an election year, a presidential election year, with this being on everybody's mind right now, we'll see some type of activity that will bring about lasting change. We won't know that, however, until the future gets here.
What can everyone do to advance the cause of liberty and justice going from here?
Well, first thing I would say is that, of course, you have to vote. Vote for whoever you like, vote for wherever party you want to, but you have to participate in the process. And one of the things that I continually remind people over and over, we focus on presidential elections and presidential election years, but the people who actually control the police departments are your mayors, are your county councils, are your city councils. Those are the elections for the people who hire and fire the sheriffs, who hire and fire the police chiefs. You want to make a lasting impact? It doesn't take a presidential election to do that. It takes your local election. It takes you running for office. It takes you showing up to your county council meeting, you showing up to your police board meetings. You want to make a lasting impact? Get involved with whatever way works for you. We have to take part. And if we take part, we can see the change that we want. And frankly, we can be the change that we want.
Chris, your thoughts on this?
I would agree with what Jesse said. I think that when I was downtown Washington, D.C., and talked to some of the demonstrators, some of them indicated to me that this seems to be a tipping point. And when I heard that, I thought about the psychology of critical mass. And that's a term for a group of people who make drastic change and alter their behaviors, opinions, and actions. So I think it's the demonstrators seem to think we have to keep protesting. We have reached a boiling point now where we can shape other people's opinions, especially white people, to get behind racial injustice protests, and we have to do something to address this. And Jesse's right. If we sit back and don't do anything, how are you going to change those opinions and attitudes? So I feel like that this is a moment in time where we might be at a tipping point, but it remains to be seen what's going to happen. A lot of demonstrations tend to kind of peter out, but from all indications, this is not the same, and that a number of people are willing to stand up, keep fighting for change, do it peacefully, and hopefully they will be rewarded by some real police reforms and changes in laws to protect people of color in this country.
Jesse, any last words?
Once again, I am just keeping my eye on what happens in states like Mississippi, what happens in states like Alabama, Tennessee, Florida. It's the southern states, the former states of the Confederacy, that will be the last holdouts. Right now, you have black athletes in Mississippi saying that they are not going to play for the state school if Mississippi doesn't change its state flags, which still has a Confederate banner on it. If you see those type of changes happening in the Deep South, that's when you know that you've made it over that tipping point, and now you're going to have real change. So I'm keeping my eye on the Deep South and the type of changes that are going to happen in states like that. We see changes in the South, we'll see changes everywhere else.
Very good, thank you. And we're going to have to end the show on that note. I want to thank my guest, Jesse Holland, journalist, historian, distinguished scholar in residence at the Library of Congress and author of Black Men Built the Capitol via Skype, and my colleague, also via Skype, Chris Simpkins, VOA senior TV correspondent. Thank you both for joining me and for a most interesting and insightful program. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Pikesville, Maryland. I'm Kim Lewis. Be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.